And once again, a very good morning to you. We're continuing our fall series. It's entitled Beside the Quiet Waters, Helpful Words That Heal. Yeah, there it is, our graphic. Now, last Sunday, if you were here, and I mentioned a little bit of this on the Wednesday night Bible study, and I debated how much to say here, but you remember we had a visitor, a man whose name was Doug. And I know him mostly through my time on air at Faith FM, as well as on Facebook these days. And he shared a word of testimony. Remember, he was giving thanks that his wife had come out of a coma, and he realized that it was due in a great part to prayers, and even prayers from this congregation. It's one of the reasons why he wanted to come here, to say thank you. He thanked us for our prayers. I mean, can you imagine? A couple weeks back, waking up, looking over at your spouse, and she's just staring off into the ceiling, not hearing a word you have to say, totally unresponsive. He didn't think she would make it. And he sent me a message, and I won't get into all the details. He said I could share it with you. He said, I tried to be upbeat with your group. Fact is, I am afraid. That's what he wrote. He's afraid for his wife's life and safety. He's afraid for his own safety, as well as the safety of their children. Now, Doug's wife, Hillary, went into that coma, and he shared it with us. She decided to take herself off of some very powerful antipsychotic drugs that she had been on. And you know, you cannot just go cold turkey on that sort of thing. That sent her into the coma. Life has not been easy for Doug's family in ways that I don't know. And again, in ways that he shared with me, but I won't share it all. We do put these sermons online. But my first purpose, first of all, is just to ask you to continue praying for Doug and for Hillary and their family. Keep them in your prayers. He really did enjoy his time here last Sunday. Actually, I was hoping Wolf was going to be here because he loved chatting with Wolf. And as you know, he kept chatting even while I was trying to preach, but that was okay. He felt loved and supported. But the other reason I share this, you know, sometimes we have a testimony of something God has done. Now, we never mean it this way, but you know, sometimes that can have a negative effect on certain people. What do I mean by that? I was thinking about how, especially the way we coach young people in giving a testimony, particularly when they're going to be baptized, right? We teach them to say, yes, my life was terrible, everything was hopeless, then I found Jesus, and now, happy all the day, I'm walking on sunshine, whoa. That's not entirely honest all the time, is it? No. No, and in any testimony time, you always run the risk of somebody who will be saying, well, hey, great for them, but why didn't God do that for me? Well, why am I having the trouble I'm having? But doesn't he love me too? And we always want to give praise to the Lord whenever he's answered our prayers. At our Bible study last Wednesday night, we talked about healing. Healing and wholeness brought to us in the arrival of Jesus, our Messiah, to this earth. And then all those Hebrew tie-ins, you know, that Rabbi Sobel does so well. It's fascinating, isn't it? How everything fits together in the pages of the Scriptures. Going right back to creation, how God brought life and light to an earth that was empty and void. Some even translate that first verse or two of Genesis 1 of somehow the earth becoming formless and void, because God said, I didn't create it that way. What happened there? Maybe the fall of Satan, we don't know. goes back a long, long ways. But then God begins to refashion everything, bringing order out of chaos. And then there's the fall in the Garden of Eden. Our ancestors sin, you know, Adam and Eve. And then the void, the hole, the chaos that was the result of their sin, both to us as humans and even to creation itself. Sin, we just got plunged right back into all of that emptiness. But God has filled that vacuum, created by sin, in the death and resurrection of his sons. We remembered again this morning in communion. He's come to fill the void. And here's the thing. He's come to fill the one that's hollowed out the inside of us. Right? Within our very own souls. He comes to fill the holes, those that are even left by sickness and disease as well. But often, the empty places still remain. Doug's wife has experienced a healing, but not totally. Not totally. There's a big road ahead. And Doug shared even some scary things with me. Those of you who were there on some Wednesday night, you'll remember Rabbi Sobel's illustration. He said, while we are saved and made whole again, we still remain a holy people. And he spelled it H-O-L-E-Y. We still have holes. Voids. We still got vacuums in our lives, and we keep coming to God to keep filling those. It's a process that's going to carry on until the day we stand before him complete, and we won't be complete until then. But when I mentioned about watching something from Tony Evans, do you know what? You know how we're going to recognize Jesus in glory? He'll be the only one with scars. He'll be the only one with holes in his hands. You and I are going to be made perfect. You and I are going to be restored. We're going to look as good as we did when we were in our 20s or 30s. I don't know. The only one who's going to still have scars in heaven is going to be Jesus. Isn't that astounding? Meantime, we keep seeking the Lord. His desire is to fill whatever void, whatever holes are still there and still plague us, right? From sin, from sickness. Oh, yes. It's one really big reason why we gather here. To encourage one another. To keep building one another up. To intercede in prayer on each other's behalf. To keep becoming more and more W-H-O-L-E. More and more whole. We really need these quiet water words, words that heal. They're far better than our usual cliches. And I was mentioning to Doug when we were writing a bit back and forth. I said, I don't have any cliches for you. We have too many in the Christian church. You know, let go and let God. And no, I wasn't going to do that. We just tend to throw those on people who are struggling. They're asking God, where's my healing? You come here for encouragement for what you are going through. Something to help you take maybe another step, give you hope for another day. Courage to once again take up your cross and follow Jesus. And that is why, by the way, if you are just walking on sunshine today, if you are just rejoicing in God today, we need you here. Because people still need to know it's possible. They still need to see a reason for hope. We can't explain it much at all to people. But you and I know this really is the right way to live, following Jesus. We know this, don't we? As Peter said, where else are we going to go? Right? Where are we going to go? You have the words of eternal life. We would be absolutely crazy to leave him now. Don't you think? You know he's walking with us, even in those times where you may be even wondering, where is he today? We still need to hear powerful stories of God's deliverance from various things. Okay, we don't hear me in the wrong way. In fact, as you remember on Wednesday, wait, is Linda out there this morning? Linda, you remember I was bugging Linda. She needs to give her testimony here sometime. You need to preach here sometime, Linda. Here's my challenge to you. Now, don't be afraid to come back, you know. And may the glory always go to him, right? But even if we're hurting right now, we still know it by faith. We know that Jesus is right here. He's right here with you. He's right here with me. As close as my next breath. And he alone will determine when it is my last breath. Oh, that day will come. But meantime, we live with his promise. He will never leave us. He will never forsake us. We choose to follow him. A thought came to my mind this week, and I went to the computer to quickly jot it down, you know, so I wouldn't forget it. I don't think this has ever occurred to me before. But we recall what Jesus told us. Remember when he said to weep with those who weep, rejoice with those who rejoice? And I thought to myself, it couldn't occur to anybody in our world today that Jesus would ever be a person who didn't practice what he preached. Even non-Christians, even atheists, they will at least acknowledge that Jesus was a truthful man. Jesus was a good man. No, Jesus was not a hypocrite. They're not so sure about some of us. But everybody recognizes, no, Jesus, what was it, the Doobie Brothers that sang, Jesus is just all right with me. Jesus is just all right. Yeah, Jesus is just all right. Are you rejoicing today? Well, Jesus is right there rejoicing with you. Are you weeping today? Are you feeling afraid, like my friend Doug is, for what might be waiting for you when you go back home? When this day ends and Monday begins again? I believe it with all my heart. Jesus is weeping with you. And we do our best to model that here for one another. We weep with those who weep. We rejoice with those who rejoice. He meant what he said. He practices what he preached. And with the encouragement we receive, we encourage one another. That's what we do here. And may we always do that here. May we always be better at doing that, because we're not perfect. No one's an expert in any of all this, me most of all. Now, for this morning, if you've been with us on those Wednesday nights, you'll have been as intrigued as I've been as Rabbi Sobel has brought out some of the Jewish ways of looking at the Bible, particularly the significance of all the numbers that have been assigned to all those Hebrew letters, numbers that have special meanings. And we learned a little bit about the number 3, the number 5. Don't ask me to remember it all. Ask Mark, he's probably remembered it all. But this past week, we learned about the number 38. 38. And even before this last Wednesday, so something like a week and a half ago, I determined that I was going to focus a couple of thoughts on the number 40. I had that in my mind. It shows up a lot in the Bible. We think of the 40 days and 40 nights that it rained. Right? When Noah was in the ark. Jesus in the New Testament fasting for 40 days and 40 nights. Now, I was going to mention the 40 years in the wilderness, but, well, you know, technically, we learned it last Wednesday, it was really 38 years. You knew that, didn't you? Yeah, I guess, yeah. Oh, the things we learn on Wednesday nights with Rabbi Sobel. Well, see, they'd already were in the wilderness for 2 years when the spies spied the land, and God said, no, you're going to wander now. So 38, technically. The word 40, though, it appears more than 150 times in the scriptures. The number 40 generally symbolizes a period of testing, trial, or probation. A period, a time of testing, trial, probation. It can also mean or symbolize a generation. 40 years is how the Bible kind of thinks of generations of people. We get a lot of that from Moses' life. Boy, talk about trials and testings. In fact, his life can be summed up in three 40-year segments. Well, the guy lived to be 120. The first 40 years of Moses' life, he grows up in Pharaoh's household, living in Egypt. Wait a second, I bet you he was there for 38 years, right? Because he was probably two when he was in that little basket. Anyway, I digress. But for 40 years, he slays that man, remember? Tries to hide his body in the sand. And then he has to run away. He has to flee. The second 40-year period of his life is spent as a shepherd in the wilderness. Sometimes God calls us to those places. Moses wasn't ready. Well, he probably thought he was. You ever all set to go and do something for the Lord? And then, no, God had to work on something there until he could really use him. So he sent him off to the wilderness for 40 years. He was a somebody and became a nobody. So he's 80 years old when he hears that voice from the burning bush. By the way, for you older folks among us, if there are any here, keep yourself in shape. Well, you never know. God may call you to do something really, really big. Moses was 80. And the last 40 years of his life are spent leading the Israelites out of Egypt, including the wandering in the wilderness, and the new generation of people reaching the promised land. Well, Joshua and Caleb, they were the exceptions, weren't they? They were among those spies sent for, 40 days to investigate the land that God had promised to give them. Moses was on Mount Sinai on two separate occasions for 40 days and 40 nights to receive God's laws. 40. We have all heard it said, life begins at 40. Yeah, I missed that boat. Doesn't help me anymore. In fact, I'm hoping 70 will end up being the new 40, just to let you know. But that's another story for another time. But as I said, in the Hebrew mind, 40 is often associated with a time of testing, trial, or probation. Now, as Rabbi Jason Sobel pointed out to us a couple weeks back, as he said, you remember all the chapter and reference, the chapter verses, the book and everything, they were all added afterwards, after these words were originally written. So the rest of this sermon will be a bit of a stretch. But if you find yourself, maybe right now, in a time of testing. Or maybe this will help you prepare for some kind of unforeseen trial yet to come. I wanted to share some encouraging words. And they're actually from two of my favorite Bible passages. I was thinking now, yes, as Kevin mentioned, he mentioned part of Isaiah 40. So I was thinking of Isaiah chapter 40. And also I was thinking of Psalm 40. So we're going to look at Psalm 40. If you want to turn there first. It was years ago, there was a church in Waterloo, and they asked if I would come and speak. I don't know if they ever asked me back, but anyway, they gave me a preaching assignment. And they asked me to speak on Psalm 40. The sermon title they gave me to work with, and really the psalm itself could be called a song of deliverance. In fact, the sermon was to be titled Songs of Deliverance. Wow. You need that after being 40 days and 40 nights or 40 years somewhere, going through a trial, going through a testing. We need a song of deliverance. We need it often in our walk with the Lord. All right, Psalm 40. Just going to look at the first five verses here. Thanks, Michael. That's right, because she's gone downstairs already. Okay. Was that Chloe or Zoe or Haley? I think I can tell the difference. Okay, Mary says it was Haley and you say it was Zoe. Haley it was. Okay. All right. Psalm 40. I waited patiently for the Lord. He turned to me and heard my cry. He lifted me out of the slimy pit, out of the mud and mire. He set my feet on a rock and gave me a firm place to stand. He put a new song in my mouth, a hymn of praise to our God. Many will see and fear the Lord and put their trust in him. Blessed is the one who trusts in the Lord, who does not look to the proud, to those who turn aside to false gods. Many, Lord my God, are the wonders you have done, the things you planned for us. None can compare with you. Were I to speak and tell of your deeds, they would be too many to declare. I mentioned this actually to some people in a previous Bible study. Well, when we think of David being lifted out of that slimy pit, out of the mud and the mire, God setting his feet on a rock and giving him a new song to sing, a hymn of praise. And it was Pastor Warren Wiersbe, great Bible teacher, Warren Wiersbe. And he said, God took David out of the mire and set him up in the choir. He went from the mire to the choir. All right, somebody liked that, I don't know. But anyway, songs, hymns of praise, they come from a heart that has experienced the goodness and deliverance of God. Now, it involves waiting. David had to wait patiently for the Lord. Actually, you ever think about it? But anybody we read about in the Bible, or anybody we read about in church history, they all had to go through a time of waiting, testing, and often in a wilderness before God could use them. But don't give up. He will hear our cry. He'll lift us up. And as we sing a new song, a hymn of praise to our God, may more and more people see it too. Maybe they'll put their trust in him. That's our prayer. Back when I first left home, I was in my early 20s, and I roomed with a guy who was a member of the Society for the Preservation of Barbershop Quartet Singing in North America. You know the group, or were you a part of it? Oh, you love it. Right on. Okay. Some people just love this. No, absolutely, absolutely. And one time, okay, we're both living in this little two-bedroom apartment in Simcoe, Ontario, and he said to me, oh, it's my turn to host the monthly business meeting of the Society for the Preservation of Barbershop Quartet Singing in North America. And I just thought, wow, that's going to be pretty crowded. There's going to be about a dozen guys there. And I said, that's fine. Hey, listen, I'm just going to, you know, hide out in my bedroom. You guys have yourself a good time. Well, I can tell you, those gatherings were not complete until a bunch of them finished singing Down by the Old Mill Stream. Oh, Old Mill Stream. Good thing they didn't stay up too late, because that would have bothered people, I think, in the apartment. No, actually, they sounded great, as you know. Yeah, it sounded great. There's something that happens when people gather together to sing. especially those of us who are followers of Jesus. The church, throughout its entire history, music, particularly songs of praise, have such power. Why should we get together and sing anyway? You know, some of your neighbors, they wouldn't think of gathering in a building like this with other people on a Sunday morning to, what, sing together out loud and everything? Who does that? Psalm 92, verses 1 to 4 says this: "It is good to praise the Lord and make music to your name, O Most High, proclaiming your love in the morning and your faithfulness at night. To the music of the 10-stringed lyre and the melody of the harp. For you make me glad by your deeds, Lord. I sing for joy at what your hands have done." Too often in our world today, and maybe it's just the cares of life. Jesus warned us about those, didn't he? You know, the cares of this life that would choke out the words sown in our hearts even. For many of us in our day, we don't sing. We don't sing. Oh, we have lots of music. I mean, you can't even go to the bathroom in a restaurant and not hear music coming out of some tinny little speaker in the ceiling, right? But we do tend to let other people do our singing for us, don't we? Recorded music. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. I was thinking we turned our clocks back. Do you know how far back we turned our clocks? There is now a brand new Rolling Stones album out and a brand new single from the Beatles. Those clocks went back a long, long time. Sorry, couldn't resist that. Now, there's nothing wrong with recorded music, of course, but I wonder, even if in church services, the music up front on the platform can be so loud. And by the way, thank you, Michael, for, man, he's working so hard to make sure this things work out. Well, you know what it is. If you're in a congregation and you can't hear yourself sing, you don't sing. You clam up. You can't compete with the volume coming out of the loudspeakers. Too many worship services end up just being concerts. Oh, you can see people, you know, getting into it and everything, but they're not singing. You can't, you know. If I can't hear myself sing, it's scary. Oh, by the way, this has nothing to do with how good you sing. Okay? Let this words of Psalm 40 be an encouragement to you to sing. Sing to the Lord. Ephesians 5, verses 19 and 20. And these are similar to the verses I shared with you last Sunday from Colossians chapter 3. Pretty much the same thing. Paul says it to the Ephesians here. He talks about speaking to one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody in your heart to the Lord, always giving thanks to God the Father for everything in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ. Here in Psalm 40, starting at verse 8, David says, "I desire to do your will, O God. Your law is within my heart. I proclaim your saving acts in the great assembly. I do not seal my lips, Lord, as you know. I do not hide your righteousness in my heart. I speak of your faithfulness and your saving help. I do not conceal your love and your faithfulness from the great assembly." And remember, none of that is our faithfulness. We proclaim the goodness of God when we get together like this. Some of that proclaiming comes through songs, comes through hymns, comes through songs from the Spirit. Do people ever just catch you humming or whistling a tune as you walk through your day? Doesn't have to be just in church. And like I say, it does not have to sound professional. In fact, praise the Lord when it doesn't sound professional, right? Doesn't have to be polished. Doesn't have to be for anyone else but the Lord, right? He said make a joyful noise, didn't he? He lifted me out of the slimy pit, gave me a firm place to stand on Christ, the solid rock. And sometimes you just got to sing about that. Your singing on a Sunday might even help somebody else. It's easy to lose your song, isn't it? It's easy. No, you singing out may help someone else. Maybe help them up out of whatever mud and mire they have found themselves in this week. God may use you to help pull somebody out of the mire and into the choir. Why wouldn't he? Hey, listen, before we get to singing that final song here this morning that I requested Kevin to do, I did mention Isaiah chapter 40, didn't I? More great words for any time of testing or trial. Now turn there if you wish. Isaiah chapter 40. Do you know I was a relatively new Christian when I saw, went to see the movie Chariots of Fire. Do you remember? Right? The story of Eric Little. That movie won the Oscar for Best Picture that year. And Eric Little was an Olympic runner, Scottish missionary to China. One of the best scenes from that whole movie. And all it was him in a church reading these verses from Isaiah chapter 40. Talk about words that heal. Let's read them together as we close, starting at verse 28. He said this, "Do you not know? Have you not heard? You want to say it together? Yes. All right. The Lord is the everlasting God." Hey, let's stand to sing it. Let's say it. Why don't you stand up, and then you can stay standing when Kevin gets up here. Let's start it again. Ready? Do you not know? Have you not heard? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He will not grow tired or weary, and his understanding no one can fathom. He gives strength to the weary and increases the power of the weak. Even youths grow tired and weary, and young men stumble and fall. But those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. We look at it every Sunday. They will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not be faint. That ought to inspire somebody to sing. On Christ, the solid rock we stand. He's our cornerstone.